You're listening to Paranormal Portal on Revolver Podcasts. Everybody, and welcome to the Paranormal Portal Podcast. Hope you guys are doing great out there. Thank you all for joining us here, and thank you all to those of you who have been spreading the word about the podcast. It's really cool to see new people coming in all the time, and I'm getting emails from people all over regarding their experiences, which is incredibly humbling, and I've just really enjoyed the opportunity to meet so many new listeners and to discuss their experiences. Today's show is no exception. But if you have an experience of your very own, ladies and gentlemen, please feel free to email me at paranormalportalradio@gmail.com. So today we're going to start out with a story by a listener, Danielle, who has had an incredible experience at a pretty young age. And so we're going to get into that right now. Welcome to the show, Danielle.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing great, and thank you so much for reaching out to me and sharing your experience with me, and thank you even more for agreeing to come on and discussing it. I think this is, it's a pretty powerful experience and a pretty terrifying one, especially being at such a young age.
Yeah, I mean, like we've talked about, and I kind of emailed you, luckily for me, I was maybe like 12 or 13 years old when this happened to me, but it was sort of a one-off or a one-time thing, and I've never had something like that happen to me in my life again. So, you know, it was, I guess I feel a little bit blessed, for lack of a better term, or just lucky that it was one time and then done.
Well, yeah, those are the best kind. I guess if they got to happen, it's best when they don't turn into a regular thing or an escalating thing. A lot of times experiences like yours are precursors to a whole lot of more activity. So I'm really thrilled that that wasn't your experience, especially as, you know, powerful as it was. I would hate to see what it could escalate into, but it's good that it was one off and done. But at the same time, you know, when I look back in a lot of experiences, I think, you know, I know they were kind of scary at the time, but I always feel like there was a reason for it, some kind of profound reason, whether it's just, you know, to remind me that the world is bigger than I think it is and that there's more going on here than we realize. But for me, all of the experiences have kind of added up to that we have a lot to learn. Does that make sense?
Sure. Yeah, of course. And, you know, this experience kind of, I guess, if nothing else, opened up my eyes and my horizon, so to speak, and just gave me a better appreciation and just opened up my vision and in being just a little bit more, like I said, open or accepting of different experiences or things that people might say they've had happened to them in their lives and not be so, I guess, closed-minded or judgmental, which that might be a harsh way to put it, but anyway, I think you understand what I'm saying.
Oh, absolutely. No, I agree completely, but why don't you walk us through what happened then?
Sure. So leading into the story, I'm just going to talk a little bit about a movie that I watched as a young girl, just because it was at the time and at the age that I was, like I said, I was about 12 or 13 when my experience happened. It was the closest relation that I had to just having sort of a frame of reference what was going on. Mm-hmm. I went to a slumber party or sleepover mm-hmm. with a couple of girls. They were good, you know, kind of good acquaintances. I don't know if I'd call them really good friends, not people that I can even really remember most of their names now, but we were 12 or 13. We were all having a blast, pizza, all the kind of classic slumber party activities. And then somebody suggested that we were going to watch a scary movie. And I grew up in kind of a very conservative home. So uh-huh. I knew right away that that wasn't something I should do, or at least not according to my parents. But of course, that's the whole, the nature of slumber parties. You get into all the trouble you possibly can that you wouldn't be able to do at home. So I think I was probably the biggest instigator once they said, you know, let's watch scary movies. And I was pulling out all of them and said, okay, let's, what about this one or this one?
Ooh, nice.
We settled on watching The Ring 2, which I can't really tell you why we did that instead of The Ring 1, because I hadn't seen, obviously, either of the movies at that time, but somebody decided that the second one was better, so we just watched it. And being 12 years old and had never seen a scary movie before in my life, it kind of terrified me.
Right.
The main character in that movie is called Samara, and she's kind of a classically known for the long, dark hair that almost covers a lot of her body down to about her knees or so. And it just was a sort of a vision or an image that stuck with me. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, that night we all kind of had trouble settling down and going to sleep, and people made up stuff about what they were seeing in the corner. But I didn't really think any of that stuff was legitimate. It was kind of all of us just playing around with each other. But, so that was sort of my, I guess, introduction into anything paranormal-like, especially since, like I said, I grew up in a conservative home. Mm-hmm. But then at some point or another, at school, middle school or whatever, people started talking about Bloody Mary. Ooh. And the whole deal that you do in the mirror in the bathroom, and you, you know, turn around three times in front of the mirror and say her name, and then when you look in the mirror, she's going to be behind you. Well, again, I was really intrigued and kind of just I sort of obsessed with the idea of seeing something like that. So I did it all the time. I did it at my house. I did it at other people's house. Wow. Probably not the smartest thing in retrospect, and I definitely don't carry on any practices like that anymore, especially sure. after what I saw later on. But like I said, I was intrigued and just totally really interested in seeing if it was real or not. So
right.
did it at a babysitter's house and never really saw anything. It was always just like, okay, well, this is fake. Mm-hmm. And then one night I was at home, and at the time I had a bunk bed that was not your typical bunk bed with just the top and bottom mattress. It was a top mattress and then a desk with the several sets of drawers that was pretty much consisted of the bottom bunk, or what would normally be the bottom bunk. Uh-huh. And then there was just a big drawer that ran the width of the bed, or however you would say it, and came out at the very bottom and sort of tucked away the bottom sure. bunk or mattress underneath the desk and other stuff. So, you know, I kind of switched back and forth since I was little, and that night I was on the bottom bunk when I went to bed. Mm-hmm. And I was sleeping on the bottom bunk facing my bed, not facing the wall, and pretty close to it. I mean, it was only a twin size, so there wasn't much room to sit lay on, you know, too far away from the bed anyway. But I was sleeping, and I was kind of in that spot or that place right before you're gonna drift off into sleep, where you start kind of getting real drowsy and groggy and kind of losing mm-hmm. Your consciousness.
Right.
So mm-hmm. I felt like I was just about to slip off and go to sleep, and then I just felt something different in the room, and it was nothing I'd ever really experienced before or noticed before. And it kind of stirred me at first, and then it woke me up within a few seconds, because I was like, whoa, what's going on?
Oh yeah.
And the best way I can put it, and I think I described this in my email to you, is it just kind of felt like it was like almost like somebody when you're sleeping and you fall asleep on the couch or somewhere else watching a movie maybe, and they put a blanket on you and you just kind of feel that that cover going right over your body. Well, it kind of felt like that, but just more of like a presence and in the room itself, and not just by me, but just the entire room felt like it had been covered by some kind of presence. And like I said, the best analogy I can use is just like being covered by a blanket. And so I felt that, and it really at first just sort of unsettled me, and I thought, wow, this is odd. And I waited, and I just kind of laid there and waited for things to, you know, go back to normal so I could go to sleep, but it didn't. And I kind of sat there for a while, and I was just, you know, still my eyes closed, still laying on the bed. I didn't shift or anything. And I kind of just, I guess, sort of argued with myself internally. And I thought, well, this is crazy, you know. This, I don't know what's going on. I just need to go to sleep. But really, I was kind of scared, and I didn't want to open my eyes. So I sat there, laid there, tried to ignore it, couldn't. And eventually, I just said, okay, this is dumb. And I opened my eyes. And then right in front of me, and like I said, I'm on a twin mattress facing the bed, so there's not a lot of space. I see this sort of, I don't know if I'd call it a shadow so much, but going back to that movie of The Ring, the best way I can describe it is it almost looked like the hair on Samara that would cover a face.
Wow.
And I didn't see a face, I didn't see a body, I didn't see anything else. It was just a long, dark sort of figure, and it was maybe a foot or two away from my face. It wasn't very far, and just sort of sitting there. It didn't move, it didn't shift, it didn't change anything. It almost felt like it was, like there was a face behind it or something, and it was just kind of looking at me or staring at me, and I thought, wow, this is... At that point, I was terrified. I had no idea what was going on.
That's amazing.
So I sat there, and, you know, assumingly if there was a face behind it, I stared at it, and it stared at me, and I stared at it, and nobody really did anything. And so I just sat there, and I thought, this can't be real. And I continued to sit there, and I was just too scared to move or do anything or scream. I just sat there, and then I don't know how long it was or how much time passed, but it felt like at least a few minutes. I just, you know, kind of kept looking at it, and I thought, well, this thing's not doing anything. Uh-huh. And I was still scared, but I guess I got a little curious at that point since nothing else was happening. And so it took a few minutes more, or seconds, or I don't know, just a period of time, and for me to build up my courage. But I eventually decided that I was going to do something about this. And so I picked up my hand and kind of ever so slightly and slowly started reaching out to the figure. And it didn't move or shift or seem to, like I said, alarmed. But, I mean, it was maybe millimeters away from actually touching the thing, and it just drifts off. And I see it go maybe about halfway down my bed, and then it just completely disappears.
Oh my God.
That got me. And so I ran off to my parents' room and told them what happened. And it was one of those kind of like we were talking about of, oh, you're just dreaming, or, oh, you're just, you know, overactive imagination. And so I stayed in there as long as I could. And then eventually I was told to go back to bed. So I did. And of course was terrified, somehow got to sleep. And like I said, here we are. Never had anything like this happen again to me in my life. Thank goodness.
What a profound first event to have. I mean, it's not the ambiguous footsteps or, you know, where are my car keys kind of thing. It's there's a figure in your bed sitting there with you, looking at you. And that's, I mean, of all the experiences I could imagine, that would be about the toughest, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of looking back, I don't know if I ever had this happen to me again. I don't know that I'd have the nerve to reach out and try to touch the thing. I don't know what went through my head to do that.
I'm impressed. Actually, I'm very impressed because, you know, I think that probably all of us that have had experiences like that, that's one thing that we ask ourselves is what would have happened if. And most of us never would gather that courage, but you did. And that's incredibly profound that you did, but almost, you know, to almost make that contact. But I just find it so interesting that it just was there. You had this experience and it drifted away, and that was the finality of it then. And so it makes you wonder, what was the nature of this thing and what was the purpose of all of that? And maybe it was Bloody Mary. Maybe she showed up.
I guess so. I don't know. She said, oh, you called for me enough. What do you want? Yeah,
exactly. I was busy. What do you need, huh? What are you just sitting there looking at me?
Yeah, I have no idea. But to me, I mean, I get what you're saying, and I guess it's nice to not have that what if. But from my perspective, I'm just like, wow, what if this thing had been malevolent or evil, and I reached out to try to touch it and pissed it off, for lack of a better term.
Right. Yeah. That's the other side of it. Sure. Are you aggravating it by making any motion? But, you know, again, I think it was an incredibly courageous act, and it was, you know, to sit there, even, you know, though you felt terrified, you still sat there and were in that moment with this other, you know, for lack of a better term, being. And, you know, I can't say that was a human. I don't know. But it was some other form of life. And you were sitting in that moment and together. And for whatever reason, it was there. I think, you know, there's so many levels of amazement for me in your story. And it sounds like, you know, to you, it was like, well, I just had this one thing happen. I don't know if it's a big deal. But when you told me in the email, I was like, wow, she was in this situation. You stayed there. You didn't scream. You didn't bolt out of your bed or anything, even though, you know, there was probably a big part of you that wanted to, but you stayed in that moment. And then you even to the point of actually getting the courage to reach out just to see. So, I mean, I got to commend you on that, because you really held it together and had a hell of an experience.
Well, I don't know that I'd ever be able to repeat that, like I said, but it does make for a good one-time story.
It really does, yeah. And again, the other part that's curious is, why was it only one-off? What was that situation all about? And I guess, you know, if maybe those kind of things are just, they're just very personal. And if you soul search, maybe you'll find a reason for it. Maybe you never will. But I guess that at least what it seems to say to me is that you had carried around this curiosity for a while, and you were reaching out over and over and over, and it just sounds like something finally answered, you know?
Yeah, maybe, and that's kind of why I let in with the Bloody Mary stuff, because that's really the only connection I can make into why something like that would have happened in the first place.
Right, so maybe it was just the universe going, yep, they're real, here you go, have a nice sit-down, and that was it. So,
yeah, but I gained a healthy respect, if nothing else. No Ouija boards or anything after that.
Well, I just think that's amazing. And I can't thank you enough for coming on and sharing that with us. And I hope that should anything else ever happen, you'll keep us in mind and come back and tell us about it.
Well, don't jinx me now. I'm not asking for anything else to happen. Once was enough, but absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you, Danielle, and have a wonderful day.
You too.
Okay, everybody, I think it's time we got to take a break, so don't go away, and we'll be right back with more of the Paranormal Portal podcast in just a couple minutes. Hey guys, Brent Thomas here of the Paranormal Portal podcast. We just wanted to take a moment to introduce you to the Paranormal Portal store. We've got t-shirts, hoodies, leggings, stickers, mugs, you name it, you might find it over there. So head on over to teespring.com/stores/paranormal-portal, and you too can help fund the Paranormal Portal podcast. Thank you so much for all that you do, and thank you for being a part of our Paranormal Portal family. Everybody, and we're back at it here on the Paranormal Portal podcast. Buckle up, we're going in. What I wanted to do tonight is open the show with this is going to be really hard. This was an email that I received from
man. I'm so sorry. This is the most emotional email I think I've ever seen. And it's hard to read. So if I fall apart, please just bear with me. This is tough, but I want to read this email and stick with me as I try to make it through. And Marshall, thank you for letting me do this. He says, "What's going on? Thank you for what you do. Your show has always been one of my favorites, and now my daughter's favorite as well. I don't know how much of the story you want to use, but you have my permission to use whatever you like. I'm not good at storytelling, so I'll let you be the judge." I'm so sorry. I tried over and over through the week to keep reading this so that it wouldn't be so hard, but it is. Shoot. First, our background. On August 17th, 2015, we lost my wife and Australia's mother to suicide. I'm so sorry. Wow. 2 months later, we lost two of our dogs. And on Christmas Day, 2 months later, we lost our Pride and Joy dog. They all got ran over. Our dogs were a big part of our family, so it was just one punch after another. Now to the ghost story about my wife. Sorry. This is called The Scent of Beauty. One week after losing my wife, my daughter and I were getting ready for bed. We were talking earlier in the day that we hadn't seen or felt Mom since she died, and both of us were kind of disappointed. Because we fully believe in spirits. As we tucked ourselves in, all of a sudden, the room filled up with the scent of Mom. Her perfume, her body, and her hair. Amazed, we looked at each other with our eyes very wide and with excitement, and said at the same time, "Mom's here." We just laid in bed talking and crying for about an hour before, as we believe, she left. This was my only experience. Now my daughter sees and feels her all the time. We have stuff move constantly and things get hidden on a daily basis, which is awesome. This last summer, my oldest daughter was visiting from Phoenix, and we were throwing her a going away party. She was making her way around getting pictures with everyone when I went to take a picture of my daughter and my wife's best friend. They both felt a hand go on each other's shoulders. They both at the same time looked to see who was there, but there was no one. They quickly realized my wife was getting into the picture too. I hope I didn't butcher these stories too bad. Thanks a lot for all you do. By the way, my wife's name was Amanda. And I'm including a picture of my beautiful wife. Thank you so much. I just need a minute. Oh, hold on. All right. Thank you guys for giving me that moment. And I'm sorry. It's the most beautiful and the most sad letter I've ever read at the same time. And then the beauty, of course, the tragedy is absolutely devastating, but the beauty is that the love survives and surrounds them. And, I just think that's so amazing and so wonderful and so tragic. And so I do apologize, everybody, but thank you for letting me get myself together. And thank you, Marshall, for letting me read your story. And please let me just encourage anyone out there who's struggling and having a hard time, reach out and get help. Let people help you, and you know, you're not alone. There's people that are waiting to help you, so please take advantage of those things. And Estrella, you're a wonderfully brave and strong young lady, and my hat is off to you. You and your whole family, you guys are nothing short of amazing to me. Thank you.
All right, so we're going to get to Nessie's story now, and we'll read through this.
Yes, excellent.
All right, so this is Nessie Monster here. I'm going to start from the beginning. So you wanted more stories? I'll warn you. This is a long one, long story to read. To protect the privacy of my friends that are with me that night, I just used their first initials of their names, J, H, and E. Just for you, I've made phonetic pronunciation of the words I know you'll have trouble with, so it might pay to have a quick pre-read. Guess what I didn't do? So we're going to check out your pronunciations in real time. See how I do. See, it's like a game show. The following story is 100% true. I spent weeks almost in shock after this night trying to get my head around it. And I've had experiences all my life, so this is really telling you something. I've also included the sketches I drew from that night. WTF just happened. And that was what I was spent a few days asking myself after the following experience. This was supposed to be a nice ride out to a lake to admire the moon and the stars without light pollution. What followed would make a plot for a scary movie. We'd heard other people having weird things happen at this location, but nothing on this scale, and we didn't think too much about it. But honestly, by the end of it, we literally felt we were fighting for our lives, trying to get out of there safely. While this may sound like we're being overly dramatic, I can assure you, it all felt very real at the time and was indeed very frightening. I cannot recommend strongly enough that anyone who ventures out to this location be prepared for anything. It was not for the faint heart. Jay and E had asked me if I would like to come out with them one night to Lake Haruko. Nice. Love you, Nessie. To check out the night sky and the moon. Well, they knew of people having spooky experiences out there, and they had an interest in the subject, and that I had an interest in the subject. So I asked my friend H, who is also a psychic medium like myself, if she wanted to come along too, and she agreed. She had daytime experiences there before, about 8 years ago, sensing strong presences. She had also heard about a lot of people having mysterious car and boat troubles out there. It's a remote location in the Fiordland National Park, New Zealand, the deepest lake in the country. No phone reception, no radio reception, no houses, no power, no lights, and down a 20-mile-long gravel road. There is a documented ancient Maori. Okay, thank you. Run the syllables all together, she says. this is perfect. Burial, and I should have her write all my stories. Burial in a cave on an island in the lake, which predates the main tribes that inhabited the area now. Oh. This cave burial site is protected behind a grill of bars in an effort to stop it from being desecrated or disturbed. We all left from my house in Jay's car. It was a beautiful, crystal, clear autumn night, perfect for stargazing. And on the way there, a car that had been following us closely disappeared in the Orawia.
Yeah.
Turn off, the lights gone, no sign of it, even though it had indicated to follow us. Okay, everybody, I think it's time we got to take a break, so don't go away, and we'll be right back with more of the Paranormal Portal podcast in just a couple minutes. Hey guys, Brent Thomas here, the Paranormal Portal Podcast. We just wanted to take a moment to introduce you to the Paranormal Portal store. We've got t-shirts, hoodies, leggings, stickers, mugs, you name it, you might find it over there. So head on over to teespring.com/stores/paranormal-portal and you too can help fund the Paranormal Portal podcast. Thank you so much for all that you do, and thank you for being a part of our Paranormal Portal family. Everybody, and we're back at it here on the Paranormal Portal podcast. Buckle up, we're going in. Minutes later, myself and Jay both saw a tall shadow person standing in the road in front of a large yellow road sign up ahead of us. The drive out there took over an hour each way, and as we got closer and on the gravel road, more things began to happen. First, H saw a light-skinned Maori man with minimal tamoko.
Those are their facial tattoos.
Yep, tribal facial tattoo on his face. Mm-hmm. He had a rounded face, and he said that he was the one who was protecting the woman buried on the island. Well, he wasn't threatening at all. He said, Puta Hiri, and we thought that was his name, but later on, we translated, and it meant go back. Ooh, that's not good. And he was warning us. Next, his lady love sat in the back seat of the car next to H. H could see a misty form materializing next to her, could describe the woman's cloak. The cloak matched the description of the one found at the burial site. H actually moved over on the other, over on the seat, because the woman looked so solid to her, and yet the rest of us couldn't see her. The woman traveled with us to the lakeside before vanishing. Neither felt threatening or in a harmful way. In fact, they felt more protective of us and wanted to share some of their story. At one point, Jay and myself both began to experience heartburn at the exact same time. H and myself experienced waves of nausea. E had a pounding headache right up until we arrived at the lake. J's left turn signal in the car randomly turned on once. Passing through the forest, I could see tribal warriors running and hiding among the trees on my left side. They were watching and following us. When we got to the lake, the car radio was still playing music despite not normally being able to get radio or cell phone reception out there. We all got out and made a short walk to the shoreline, and we all felt a vibrating sensation all up and down our bodies. The temperature was 6 or 7 degrees warmer by the lake than out by the main road, and it was not windy, and the lake was calm, but yet the waves on the lake sounded rough and choppy, and it was really odd. Our flashlights were malfunctioning on and off the whole time. H could hear a woman screaming. Jay heard someone coughing. And we called out in Maori to them, saying hello and asking their names. On the shore, it really felt crowded, like we had to make our way through a big group of people, even though we were the only ones there. I saw the bow of a simple waka, a canoe type of boat, sitting in the shallows of the water by where we were. It had no bow decoration seen in traditional waka, and I could see the bow coming to a point, the red-brown color of the wood, the thickness of the sides of the waka. No one else could see it, and it didn't show up in photos. Part of the jetty was underwater, which was apparently unusual, and there was a sign by the lake talking about it being a battle site that the Urupa, sacred Maori burial grounds, were nearby. We all felt like we were being watched, and several of us heard women's voices chanting and calling out at different times, but could not make out the words. At one point, Jay saw eyes glowing near us, and yet there were no animals there. Feeling unwelcome, we all decided to walk back to the car, but something began getting aggressive with the only male in the group and pushed Jay over, and then it hit him around the head. On the way back to the path, Jay felt uneasy about walking through a shelter over the pathway, and I could see something moving across in the dark. We got back to the car, and we could hear the car making an odd clicking noises, and a rock was thrown at it, at Jay, with force. The rock was a few inches across in size. Wow, that's significant. We decided that was enough was enough, and we got in the car ready to leave. Now, keep in mind, this car is Jay's pride and joy, well-maintained, and normally doesn't miss a beat. Jay tried to start the car, and the lights would go on, but the fuel pump would not work. We tried several times without success, so I began praying for help and for protection. Well, this didn't work at first, and we heard a thump, which sounded like something hitting the back of the car while we were sitting inside of it. The radio turned itself on and off, and after about five minutes of trying, the car started fine and we went to leave the car park. Just at the exit of the car park, the car lost all power. Lights went out, everything, and Jay had to slam on the brakes since we couldn't see where we were going in the pitch black. The fear was beginning to kick in now. Not knowing what would happen if we didn't make it out of there that night, H and I were calling on our angels, spirit guides, and ancestors to help us, and the car started again. The next 20 miles, the car would lose power by itself, speed up by itself, turn signals would keep flashing by themselves, and the windscreen wipers would turn themselves on and off. H focused hard on visualizing all of her angels and ancestors protecting us. She could actually see 5 beams of 7 feet tall white light beings guiding our car and fending off the flying Maori warrior spirits that were chasing us, trying to attach themselves to the car. The white light beings would push them off. The Maori warrior spirits looked like older male warriors, and H could see their tattooed heads and torsos following by mist trails. At one point, there was only 3 Maori warriors left, and H thought she could relax, but as soon as she did, the car engine began to die again, so she redoubled her efforts, and I did too, calling on my angels and spirit guides by name, as well as my ancestors, to help us. I couldn't manage to protect a white light over the entire car, so I focused on creating a protective field of white light around Jay, our driver, trying to keep him calm while he was desperately attempting to control the car. The car suddenly struggled to get over a small bridge, so I began calling on Archangel Michael for protection, and the car suddenly surged ahead again. The car became stuck in one gear, and Jay couldn't change the gears without some force, and this thankfully soon came right again. At one point, the car suddenly sped up out of control as we were heading towards a corner, and we were all terrified. We were going to go off the road and over a cliff, and Jay commented during this drive that it felt like he wasn't the one driving. At one point, Jay was so shaken that he needed to pull over to collect himself. There had been a cold presence between E and H in the back seat, playing with E's hair while we were driving, and when Jay opened the window briefly, when he stopped, the 3 of them felt a cold rush of air moving outwards as if something left the car. Once we reached the Tarsiel Road, we had no more issues bar one, but we were all very shaken by our experiences. The final experience was as we crossed over a particular bridge. The car surged one final time. The speedometer said 100 kilometers, approximately 62 miles per hour, but it felt much faster for a distance of about 100 meters, and we actually were pushed back in our seats from the surge like you do on a plane during takeoff. The whole trip there and back took 3 hours, and Jay had his car checked for any mechanical issues or electrical faults, and yet the mechanic and auto electrician could find nothing wrong with it. And it has driven perfectly fine since that night. Analyzing photos we managed to take that night, we saw some ghostly images that sent chills down our spine. The photos that were on my phone were mysteriously gone the next day. One showed 2 skulls, one stacked on the top of the other, the bottom one looking like an animal skull of some sort. Another photo that went missing showed the side profile in color of a Maori warrior's face. And you could clearly make out facial details in the tamoko. I remembered this image so clearly. I sketched it as well as the waka that I saw on the lake edge. mists keep showing in some photos when there was no mist anywhere at all in person. One picture also showed something attempting to materialize on the lakeshore. Nothing was visible to the naked eye at the time. Maori are traditionally known for their deep spiritual connection to their ancestors and to the land. We believe what we experienced was a combination of both, a residual haunting and an intelligent haunting. 2 weeks after our experience, just enough time to make me think that maybe it was just hysteria or an overactive imaginations, news broke that a couple had died in a boating accident on the lake, and the woman's body had been recovered. The man's body and the boat itself were never found.
Wow.
At that point, the sense of unease returned, so we contacted the elders of the local Maori tribe. We relayed our experiences to them. The elders felt it was now necessary for them to make a trip to the island where the burial is situated to check on the burial site. The bones had been disturbed and scattered. The tribal elders were now working to more effectively protect this sacred historic site. They also told us the sensation we had on the journey home of feeling like we were speeding up by the bridge was us leaving the realm of the spirit warriors. We also discovered after some research that elements like water and limestone are excellent conductors for spiritual activity. And the area is rich in limestone, and of course the lake we went to visit had all the water element you could ask for. It took us months before we were ready to go out there again, and even in the daytime, the forest is still very active spiritually. But that's a story for another time. All right, guys, thank you so much for joining us here on tonight's show. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Please feel free to follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/paranormalportalradio, as well as finding us on Twitter. We're on Twitter at Paranormal Portal, P-O-R-T-L. And we'd love to have you stop by our YouTube page and subscribe and check out our shows there. We got hundreds of shows in our vault of journeys into the paranormal portal. So I hope you'll check it out, guys. We're over there at youtube.com/paranormalportal. So hope to see you guys soon. We'll be back, of course, for more podcasts in the coming days. So stay tuned. But we love you all. Be good, be kind, be nice. Take care of each other. Help each other out. Find the magic in every day and remember to laugh as much as you can. Take care, everybody.
sports betting is sweeping across the country faster than the coronavirus, and Wagering Week is your antidote. I'm Tom Martin, and I'm a veteran sports analyst and respected sports handicapper who helped build ESPN's brand. I've been recognized and awarded by Pro Football Weekly and Gaming Today magazine as the honest handicapper. Let the other guys give you the same old boring sports talk with the same tired storylines. We'll give it to you straight here every Friday on Wagering Week. Don't gamble with other podcasts. Let Sports Garden Network's Wagering Week help your bottom line.